Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host. We've got a full crew here today. We've got Cody Thompson, post-leg break. How you doing, Cody?
Doing all right. Just got my leg elevated right here and glad to be back.
How did you hook up all the equipment there on your couch?
A lot of not asking my wife to grab things from upstairs and bring them down here. So me not moving so much.
Thank you, Lindsay. We've got Bo Johnson. How you doing, Bo?
I'm doing great. It's fun to see Cody back. Glad you're here, bro.
We initially were going to stop asking people how they were doing, and a listener said, hey, it's good when you ask because then we know whose voice goes with which person. And when we have a lot of people on, that's really helpful. And we also have on mic Tracy Noble here in studio. How you doing, Trace?
Happy to be here, Pat.
Yeah, it's great to have everybody here from injuries and everything else. Your sister's doing better. Thank God. Yep. That's great. We've got Karen and Matt in studio. Cody, what is our topic today?
Hurts so good.
Yes, you came up with that. That was a beautiful idea. A little throwback to John Cougar Mellencamp or whatever his name is now. John Mellencamp. That's what he goes by now.
He dropped the cougar.
All right. Very good. Now that we know that, which we're all better for. So hurts so good. What are we talking about here? Today's conversation is going to be about pruning. We're recording this the day before. No, today is Valentine's Day. So we're in winter. And pruning is something a lot of people that do gardening are thinking about right now. It's in the Bible about the importance of pruning, cutting things back. And it is such a central part of being a leader and being in an organization and just being a human being. And yet, nobody really likes to prune. It is painful. And the thing about it is eventually it produces great things, but the process of doing it is not fun. And the benefits come quite a bit later. So a lot of people don't prune and they pay for that. And yet it's a really good thing to do.
So when you teed up this topic, I asked you this question, Pat, which is, well, just a couple episodes ago, we talked about layoffs, and it seems a little soon even to have just talked about layoffs and now be talking about pruning. And you were explaining to me how they're slightly different. Say more about that.
Yeah. So pruning is what we should be always be doing so that we are always healthy and vibrant and doing the best we can. A layoff is often what happens when we don't prune, and then the market forces us to pull up a plant by its roots. And so pruning is different. It's proactive. It's anticipatory. It's taking on pain before you have to in order to experience less pain and to experience really good, vibrant growth later. But I think the average person, most of us, the human condition is that we often don't do things until we have to. And then the cost of that is greater.
Yeah. So we understand that kind of intuitively. We mow our lawn and it helps our grass stay healthy. And I actually remember growing up with these big rose bushes. And one day my dad said, I want you to go and prune the rose bushes. And I started trimming them, cutting them back. My sister came out. She's like, you cut them way too far back. Dad's going to be so mad. And I don't know how old I was, but I was like, oh no, I killed the rose bushes. And my dad came home and he's like, oh no, you didn't cut back nearly far enough. Like pruning actually helps the plant be able to have a healthier summer, healthier growth. Can you make the connection more explicitly for me, Pat? How does it help us as leaders? How does it help us as organizations and teams to do pruning? Does it eventually also lead to growth? Is it just something that helps us stay financially viable? What's the connection there?
No, I think that by definition, when we talk about pruning, it has to be about future growth. And in a plant, it means you're not wasting. You have finite water and minerals, I guess. I'm not a botanist, but I play one on TV. But you have a finite amount of material that fuels a plant, and you want to make sure that goes to the right part of the plant. And when you don't prune, you're dispersing that water and that, you know, fertilizer and everything else over too much. And so overall, the plant sags. And so the idea here, you don't prune just to do it. You do it because it's going to yield benefits in the future. But you often don't know what those benefits are going to be specifically. And you definitely don't experience them right away. And in a world where people like immediate gratification, pruning is pretty countercultural.
Right.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah.
I think it does. I love the analogy because, like you said, Pat, there's this limited amount of resources, like the lifeblood of the tree or the life, call it your organization or even your team. And you want the most nutrient dense things, the things that are supposed to thrive, to get that lifeblood. And if we treat everything the same way, or if we, I think even in the analogy or the story that you told, Bo, it's oftentimes you're not just pruning every single branch. You're concentrating like the healthiest branch. You're pruning away the ones that are not healthy for the sake of concentrating the resources and growth to the right parts of the tree or bush or your organization and team. So I think that is really the way to look at it. But it is, like you said, Pat, it's a painful process that seems somewhat counterintuitive, that you have to go through a little bit of pain. This hurts so good, you know, John Mellencamp thing is, first it's painful for the ultimate reason of growing.
You know, it's interesting. I was just going to ask about the harshness of this, Cody. Mm. You mentioned the pain. We're talking about people here. And when you say pruning and you're referencing people, it sounds harsh. So talk about that a little bit.
Well, can I say something real quick? Bo Sure. told me something before we started the podcast that really helped me. Because Tracy, we were going into this to thinking about people, and that's a big part of pruning the people. Mm-hmm. It's actually pruning of programs and activities mm-hmm. too.
So it's
sometimes
both.
You have to prune customers. Mm. Because if your organization wants to focus on your most important customers, the ones that are really central, sometimes you have to lose the others, because otherwise your finite resources are going to be spread out too far. Mm-hmm. So it is oftentimes we have to cut people back. And that is the most painful kind of pruning, to let mm-hmm. somebody go because they don't fit, they're not a cultural fit, or they're working on something that's not important and you don't have another place for them in the organization. But actually, so I want to go to Cody, but I wanted to say this first, and that's, mm-hmm. that's why doing something like the Working Genius is a really good thing to do before you prune, because oftentimes you're going to prune. It's like, you know, when the gardener comes and whacks back a bush using a machine, like cutting my hair with a clipper, the best pruning is done surgically. Like, have you ever watched somebody pruning? They have these little pruning shears and they're cutting things back very carefully. Mm-hmm. And that's why you got to know who's who in the organization. And when you prune, you want to do it very intentionally, mm-hmm. whether it's a person, which requires the most intentionality, or a program or a customer base or anything like that. Cody, what would you add to that? I'm sorry to answer.
I love that you pointed that out, Tracy. And I think this is the part of the problem, is that it is painful. And it is actually really painful to talk about pruning people, not even on your team or in your organization, but like you have to, you know, you talk about this, I'm in my mid 30s, and almost everything you read from people who are trying to, you know, grow individually, they talk about assessing your personal relationships and saying, hey, which of these people are actually helping me get to become the person that I'm wanting to become? And there's a handful of times where you're assessing your personal life and you're thinking, boy, I've been friends with this person for years and they're not really helping me grow. Is this a friendship I want to continue to invest in? And that is painful. But I think what happens in organizations and personally is the avoidance of that pain and discomfort causes people to simply not prune, and then as a result, face the consequences of not thriving.
Yeah, and you know something, we talked about this beforehand, Cody, that's a really good point. Oddly enough, the people who get pruned in an organization, if it's done for the right reasons and it's done well, they actually benefit faster. It's not like you prune something, you just throw it in the fire. When you're pruning people, they get planted somewhere else. And usually they actually experience the benefits of pruning before the organization does. Mm-hmm. They're often like, ooh, this is better. Yeah, that was hard and painful, but now I'm off and doing my own thing. Whereas the organization suffers for longer, and it might take 2 months for a person who's pruned to land and feel good about it, whereas the organization might not feel the full impact of that pruning for 6 months. And so it really does hurt so much, but it's so good for people to do that.
You know, I'm thinking about in the social sector, nonprofit world, and I worked in higher ed for many years, and I saw in that industry, once you'd started a program, it was the hardest thing in the world to kill that program.
Churches are like that too.
It had been built up and staffed, and then sometimes the staff sort of exists to protect the program and wonder, am I still going to have a place here if we shut down this thing, even if it's sort of outdated? So I have two questions about that. First, Pat, if you're sitting with a leader, how do you help them decide what they should cut? What should they, what are the programs or processes, products that they should be pruning?
That's a great question, one that we haven't prepped for. I think what I would do is I would go through their six critical questions and say, let's go back to the basics. Why do we exist? Let's get back to the very fundamentals, the roots of our the tree, you know, at the tree. Why does this company even exist? And then how do we behave? Those first two identity questions. And start there and say, what are we doing that doesn't align with why we exist and how do we behave? Are there people who don't really fit? Are there programs that are kind of ancillary? Let's cut those things out so we're not depriving the core of what we do, the core purpose, the core values, of the nutrients they need. And then I would go and I would say, so what business are we in and what's our strategy? And are there things that are off strategy that might be making money but are really depriving us of the things we really need to do? You know, I have a great story about a priest I know. His name's Father John Ricardo, a great guy. And he was a parish priest at one point. And, you know, all these churches will have like 35 ministries. We have 35 ministries. We have the left-handed poetry ministry. And we have the, you know, people between the ages of 15 and 17 ministries. And there's all these ministries. None of them are thriving, but they brag about the number they have. And he went into his church and stopped everything for literally 6 months. And they focused on one thing for everyone. And the place went crazy. It went vibrant. Everything started to grow. And then you could bring back a few of the other ministries that made sense. And people weren't so worried about the ones they had cut because they could see how wonderful it is to get everybody rallied around one thing. And so pruning is often about focusing.
Yeah, Pat, I think that is the exact right exercise for people to go through, both from a cultural standpoint of how do we behave. And then I love that you went into question number four, which is how will we succeed? And I have a great example of this too. We have a very healthy, you know, when people call or email us and say, hey, what are some really healthy organizations out there? There's a painting company that I've been telling you about called Gray Days that our consultants have worked with. They've adopted organizational health at a just in a tremendous way. Their culture is incredible. The people they're bringing into that organization, and what I think is surprising that they experience, that I think so many companies need to hear, is they started experiencing way more growth when they got clear about what they say no to rather than what they say yes to. And so often, I think this is related to this pruning conversation. Is, hey, if growth means we should have more people and more programs and more, you know, things in our business and more opportunities. And really, when you get clear about here's what we should say no to and put all of our resources and energy and the lifeblood of this organization into the right things, you grow more by saying no in some cases than by saying yes. And that's exactly what they did. They went through and said, hey, what are our strategic anchors? How are we going to succeed? And they got absolute clarity and focus on what are the projects, a painting company. They were saying yes to, hey, we could paint any building. And when they got even clearer on the type of project, they experienced massive growth, clarity, and focus of all their resources. And it's paid off in spades for them.
You know, I think the one thing we have to stop and say here, though, because otherwise these can look like very simple case studies. And that is the pain that Father John Ricardo went through when he shut down those ministries for 6 months. People were going like, but we can't do that. You don't understand. It's going to hurt people. And he as a leader had to say, I'm looking at our church 6 months from now, not just today. Trust me. And a lot of people were really worried. And he had to sit through that. And at Gray Days, you know that people were going, but there's revenue there and there's things that we're going to lose out. And the leader had to sit in that pain and go, trust me, it's going to be okay.
We don't even have to use outside case studies for this, Pat. We've experienced this internally, and I don't want this podcast just to be about us, but I think it's helpful to understand that we had a very vibrant program that was a couple years old that we were all excited about, that 30% of our staff was participating in. And it took 7, 8, 9, tell me how many conversations it took for us to get in a room and evaluate it based on our strategy. And there was something in our gut that was like, it doesn't feel like it fits, even though we love all these people. And there was both a relational weight to it. There was a a financial weight to it, all of these things. And ultimately, it was a program that we pruned that was extremely painful, but led to us focusing our resources in a different way.
Yeah, I want to clarify for our listeners, because they make a, well, what was it? So when COVID started, we went out and started doing podcasts for any consultant around the world who might have been struggling. A whole bunch of people responded, and we started something called Kappa Pro, which is for consultants and practitioners who wanted to be members and learn from us. So we did it for like 2 years. We loved the people in it. It came from a really good place. Karen really ran the program. It was fantastic. But we realized that there were other things like Working Genius that we needed to do. And so we had to cut it back. It was so hard to do that. And I just want you to know, Cody, Karen is still pissed off at you for doing it. No, she's not. She's not. But you know what's funny? The members of Kappa Pro, as disappointed as they were, are thriving. Yeah. Some have gotten involved in other things. They've gone out on their own. We still talk to some of them. Mm-hmm. And so it was the right thing to do all the way around. But to diminish the pain of making that decision would be to make people feel like it's just too easy.
Yeah, so I want to ask a question about the people side. First, make one observation. I love, Pat, how you started with the question of why do we exist? And I think sometimes it's easy to protect our turf, and that becomes sort of our accidental mission, is protect what's mine, protect what I'm used to. And I think the leader's job is to keep that vision in front of everybody all the time of here is why we exist. Yeah, I just think that's, I love that you said that and wanted to double down on that. My question for you is about the person who takes that thing really personally. And is that just something you just have to deal with? You tell them to just get over? Is there anything you can do as a leader to help them be able to work through that of, I'm saying, we might be saying no to them as a person, or I might be saying no to a program or process or meeting that they used to run?
It's a great question. Karen just wrote me a note, and I think it goes right with this. When we ended Kappa Pro, we explained it to the members and to the people here, Karen and everybody else, in light of what we were trying to do. So when you come back and explain the wisdom of it and why you want healthier flowers and healthier plants in the spring, most people are so reasonable and it makes sense. So you don't just prune and not explain to people why you're pruning. You keep them focused on the goal and the purpose. And so you never do it and just say, get over it. You say, we want this down the road more than what we have today. And if a person is still saying, no, I really want to protect what I have today more than that, then you have to give them permission to find another place to get what they need. But most people, when the downstream process is explained to them and what they're trying to do, will say, yeah, you know something, that makes sense. I can deal with the pruning for a while because I want what we all want.
And I would say, Pat, this is very much a microcosm of how a healthy organization can cast that vision and then have ideological conflict. The reason that we had, you know, 9 conversations about this is because our whole team was in pursuit of the best answer. So we all had that baseline of trust. We knew we weren't, you know, it wasn't my own career or compensation, or anybody in that room wasn't thinking about themselves. We were thinking about the mission of the company and the results of the company. And so when an organization has that level of clarity and you're in the room arguing about whether we should keep a program or a person or whatever, and that is sort of the way that this is supposed to work, is we all go into that room putting our table group hat on and we can see the spring flowers. And so it's the idea of conflict is actually not about me winning or you winning or Karen winning. It was about what's best for the company and the long-term impact. And so we can have good ideological debate that is not about totem poling our own personal status or opinion.
I was thinking about something as you shared that, Cody, and I don't think I've ever said this before, so I'm curious to hear the three of you respond to it, which is somebody told me once that you should always have feedback and firing conversations separately. Because if you're imagining you're sitting down with somebody to say, hey, we're doing some pruning, that program no longer makes sense anymore, and then you can put on your empathy hat and vision hat, it feels sort of odd and clunky to also say, yeah, and you just haven't been to work on time enough to be able to keep those conversations separately. Tell me, is that wise? Does that feel right to you?
Fiery conversations and feedback. Oh, yeah, like performance feedback.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. because they're two different things. You know, it's interesting. That's very interesting. When we talk about in the five dysfunctions of a team, the difference between conflict and accountability, both of them are emotional, but they need to be different. To have conflict, which would be more the fiery part, like, I think that's a terrible idea. I think that's not personalized. You're talking about this other thing. You're talking about, we call it ideological conflict, a conflict around ideas. But when you're saying to somebody, I need your performance to change, that requires so much more grace and sensitivity. And if you mix those two things up, it's a bad idea. So I think that's what those two things are. One is about ideological conflict. Fiery is fine because you trust each other. The other is about their behavior, and that requires a lot more dexterity.
Did you say fiery or firing?
Firing.
Oh, okay. Forget about everything I just said.
Also fantastic and really interesting.
All right. Maybe there was some accidental benefit from that. Firing somebody and giving them feedback, those should be done differently. Absolutely.
Well, and I would just say, Pat, the way that you've always talked about this is if you are holding someone accountable to behaviors or performance, the idea is to do that as often as you see them breaking the behaviors. Or so I know Pat's answer would be, hey, by the time it gets to the firing conversation, you've had the feedback conversation enough times where it's not a surprise. So they're very often not together. It's like, hey, remember those seven other conversations we had about changing your behavior? We're not there yet. I need you to opt in to do that, or we're going to have to make you available to the market. But oftentimes, like Pat says, they typically will change the behavior or opt out on their own before you even have to have that conversation.
Yes. I am still laughing at the fact that I answered an entire question that wasn't really asked. Maybe there was benefit in that. But here's the thing. Pruning needs to be done very intentionally and thoughtfully. You can't simultaneously be deciding what to prune and pruning, right? And so the firing is the last clip when you're actually clipping it. Well, that required studying the plant and actually discerning what's going on. And that's why you can't prune with a chainsaw, right? It needs to be surgical. It needs to be intentional. But when you finally figured out that's the right thing to do, then you clip it and make your decision. So you can't be deciding how to prune and pruning at the same time. That it's messy and somebody's going to get hurt.
So Pat, talk about when you're pruning people. It's obviously that dynamic is difficult, letting someone go. But what about the aftermath of that? We talked a little bit about the aftermath of pruning projects, programs. But what about when you're pruning people? How are the folks left behind to feel? And how do you deal with that as a leader?
Wow, it's so interesting. Okay, first of all, you need to treat the people that you're pruning really, really well. And so good organizations do that. Great organizations also give more fertilizer and fuel to the people that stay. So horrible organizations do neither. They're like, well, we made the cuts. On we go. The people that have left behind, or the people that are gone don't get treated particularly well. The people that are there, they think, well, they're lucky to have a job. They're going to be fine. That's the worst case scenario. Slightly more thoughtful organizations will care about the people that are being let go, and they'll say to their employees, hey, treat them really well. But the really good organizations will say the survivors might actually be hurting worse than the people let go, because there's no clarity, there's more work to be done. So pouring into them is actually going to be extremely important. And so after a layoff, I think leaders have to realize the hard work is just beginning. And they're going to have to keep watering that plant and nurturing that plant. And yes, the flowers are going to grow, and everybody's going to be happier, and you're going to be, as a leader, exhausted, and you'll be glad that you are. So pruning, we were going to call this episode prune juice, because it's another thing that's good for you, but you don't often want to take that. And I'm only in my mid-30s like you, Cody, so I don't know about that yet. But instead, we called it Hurt So Good, because I think it's an even better title. Now, we need to do an unpaid advertisement now. And Cody, you're just a fount of creativity today. You came up with who we're going to do a unpaid advertisement for, right?
It was sort of by mistake, but we're going to advertise Nate Bergazzi, a comedian who's got specials on a handful of platforms. He's a clean comedian, extremely hilarious guy. His delivery is fantastic. But the reason that I brought it up today was I was going to do an anti-commercial for hospitals because I recently experienced a hospital. And many of the
staff love hospitals, but there's a lot of inefficiency. There's a lot of inefficiency in hospitals. I mean, we love people that work there, but the people that work there know the pain of this too. So go ahead and tell that.
And all of those people were fantastic. It was more the system. And one of the things that is so frustrating that Nate Bergazzi does in one of his specials is he's like, every time you go into the hospital, they have you fill out the same form, the same piece of paper as the last time you were at the hospital. And it's unbelievable. And I obviously won't do it justice the way he does it. But essentially in his act, he says, hey, do you guys have a fire every time that I leave? Like every night, is there a fire that burns all the paperwork that we give you? Because this, I filled out this form last time I was here. And if you want me to just take it home and keep it safe so that I can bring it back to you next time, that's exactly how you feel when you go to the hospital is, didn't I give you this information and then three other departments? And the idea that you would, it was just comical that he is like, I'll keep it safe at my house and I'll bring it back to you guys when you need it. That would solve a little bit of the frustration at the hospital. But Nate Bergazzi, fantastic comedian. Go find some of his stuff. He's great.
You can watch it with your kids. It's hilarious. Mm-hmm. So he's our unpaid advertisement. All righty. That's it for today. Thanks for joining us, everybody, the crew here and all of our listeners. We'll talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.